And I'm Ash. Welcome to Crime Potatoes Podcast.
Grab your snacks, get comfy,
and let's get to it. Welcome back to another episode.
Another week, another episode, and it's Ashton's turn to be sick.
Yeah, so we swapped places this week. I am the one that is so sick, as you can probably tell. It has been a miserable week. Luckily, you get to listen to Ken's today, so you don't have to hear my nasty voice too much, but yeah.
At least there's that.
Yeah. But what are you snacking on, Kins?
Well, I have coffee because I drink my water first today. And so I'm just barely getting to my coffee. And then I have the peanut butter M&Ms, but the mega M&Ms. So
I hate peanut butter M&Ms.
I know you
do.
They're
so gross.
You're so weird.
They're nasty.
Well, what about you, Ash? What are you snacking on?
I have some water. And then I have a banana. And then I also have some chocolate orange from Christmas.
Oh, nice.
From Santa.
Nice.
So.
I don't know why I thought the banana was funny, but it was. So.
Yeah.
I don't like. I can't eat bananas?
I did not know that.
Like, they make me gag. Like, the texture.
That's weird.
Like, I try to chew it up and I
start
gagging.
Weird. That's really weird.
Yeah.
I like bananas, but I've been trying to eat more because when I went to the doctor and they had to draw my blood and everything, they said that I was low on potassium. Is that what it is? Mm. And bananas are high in potassium, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was like, maybe I just made that crap up. Who knows?
No, I'm pretty sure that's right because we've been told that since we were little. So.
Yeah. And every time I laugh, it turns into, like, a violent cough. So, I'm really sorry about that. I'll try to avoid laughing.
Well, I'm not that funny, so.
You're right. So, we should be good.
Also, to our listeners, if you hear any background noise, I apologize. I have boys being boys playing Halo, maybe? I don't know. Something with their toy guns.
Oh boy.
Whatever.
No worries.
But anyways, is that it?
All right. I'll let you get to it. Yeah.
All right. Don't forget to check out our comfort link in our show notes. Get you some comfort.
Yes.
Just got to throw that out there.
It's so good. It's worth every freaking penny. It's so nice.
Heck yeah. All right. My case sources today are the State of California Department of Justice website, truecrimediva.com, International Missing Persons Wiki, medium.com, doenetwork.org, and thecharlieproject.org. 19-year-old Cindy Lee Mellons dreamed of becoming a teacher. And she was working hard to make that dream come true. While she was going to school full-time, she also worked part-time at the mall. But on January 21st, 1970, everything changed. Cindy never made it home after finishing the closing shift, and when her father discovered her empty car in the mall parking lot, a chilling uncertainty began to set in.
I feel like I've heard this one. But we'll see.
I don't know. It sounded familiar when I was doing research. But yeah. Cindy Mellon was born on December 3rd, 1950 in Ventura, California, as the fourth of five daughters to Leonard and Adri Mellon. Raised in a close-knit family, she developed strong bonds with her sisters and grew up surrounded by love and support. Cindy's older sister, Janice, later told Ventura County Star that her sister was, quote, quiet, obedient, hardworking, spiritual, a downright goody two-shoe, end quote. According to her family, Cindy always informed her parents of her plans. Even after becoming an adult, she didn't like to worry her parents. Cindy was so devoted to her studies that she didn't even leave herself time to date. If she wasn't at school, she was working. And if she wasn't working, she was studying. Cindy worked at the Broadway department store in the Buenaventura Shopping Center. And fun fact, today the Broadway department store goes by the name Macy's.
I don't know if you guys could hear me. I was trying to stay away from the microphone because, you know, I'm eating a banana and I can't breathe. So it sounds really, really nice. I was just like, huh, Macy's. I know that one. But anyway, we can continue.
Anyway, the only thing that her sisters said that Cindy would ever complain about was the fact that her employer required employees to park in a back parking lot behind the shopping center, making it a bit of a trek to her car, especially at night. She hated walking alone at night. When one sister told her that she should just park closer like many of the other employees do, Cindy just couldn't bring herself to do it, knowing she would be breaking the rules.
I am with her, though. I definitely would have broke the rules and probably parked up front because
I would have broke the rules.
Remember working at this place, and it wasn't a large building. I didn't have to walk very far, but I did have to park out back. There was no street lights or nothing. It was so dark, and it always creeps me out. So I get that. I would have been like, heck
yeah. No, I would have parked as close as possible. I mean, you know me, I've always been scared of the dark. I've gotten better like at night sleeping in the dark, but I hate the dark. I am not a fan. So
yeah,
Cindy, you should have broken the rules.
Yeah, I don't blame her. Yeah.
On January 21st, 1970, Leonard Mellon woke up around 4:30 in the morning and noticed that the front porch light was still on and Cindy's car was not parked outside. Knowing she worked the night before and was never later than 11 at getting home, Leonard began to worry. He decided to wait a few more hours, but when Leonard learned that Cindy didn't show up for her scheduled final exam at 8 o'clock that morning, he knew something was wrong. Worried, Leonard drove to where Cindy parked her car during work hours, and there was Cindy's car, sitting on a jack with a slashed tire, the driver's side door and trunk left open, the spare tire and a lug wrench, which the lug wrench didn't match the car's tires, were laying on the ground next to the jack. Cindy was nowhere to be seen. Leonard. Sorry, what?
You know where it's going. Yeah. So it's just, ugh.
Yeah. Leonard immediately went to the police to report his daughter missing. Unfortunately, at that time, remember, 1970, since Cindy wasn't an adult, the police told her father that he had to wait 24 hours to report her missing. So he did. And after Cindy still hadn't returned home at the 24-hour mark, he reported her missing and an investigation was opened.
I hate that we had to wait 24 hours. I mean, a lot of places still do, and I just hate it. Especially
some places still do, but you can fight it. Yeah. Now I hear a lot of people say no. You fight and say no. You go look for them. I would much rather if I went missing, and you just felt like something was wrong. I would much rather you go report me missing. And then I show up 10 hours later and be like, why? I'm right here, guys. I'm fine. Then not and lose a lot of time.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Fair.
But yeah, I mean, for the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Things have definitely changed. Police began by interviewing Cindy's coworkers and employees of the nearby stores in the shopping center. What they learned was that Cindy wasn't on the schedule to work that night, but a coworker had called her in to work the closing shift, 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. So here is the timeline investigators came up with. At 5:30 p.m., Cindy clocked in to work. At about 9:40 p.m., Cindy clocks out of work. Around 9:50 to 10 o'clock p.m., two coworkers and their husbands see Cindy standing beside her car on their way to get coffee. They all say they saw her car up on the jack and a slim, tall man who looked to be between 30 to 40 was with her. Cindy saw them and waved, so they waved back and assumed the man to be her father or someone she knew. At around 10:10 to 10:15 p.m., the group returned from getting coffee and Cindy and the mystery man were gone. This left the two couples the last to see Cindy. Investigators were baffled over this, especially since this parking lot was on Main Street, which was always busy. So they felt that more people should have seen something and came forward, but no one ever did.
Yeah, that's kind of wild, being in such like a...
Right?
More trafficked area. Like, that's just...
Yeah, and it was a Tuesday night around 10 o'clock p.m., and they said, I mean, this is in California,
yeah,
and a lot of people, it was in the shopping center around where there's, obviously a coffee shop was nearby and other restaurants and stuff.
Yeah,
so
that's
insane.
Like, there's probably so many people that probably could have come forward and they just didn't think they saw anything, you know? They might have been around at that time or... They are just like, oh, I didn't see anything.
Right.
Which you never know. Even if you don't think you saw something, you might have seen something. Might not have seen significant at the time.
So something so small.
Yeah. It's wild. All right.
Yeah. So yeah, keep in mind that this was also a time before DNA and such. So fingerprints and other evidence were relied on during investigations. Unfortunately, no such evidence was found around or inside Cindy's car, and the crime lab couldn't say for sure that a knife caused the puncture to the tire of Cindy's car, because a shard of glass or even a rock could have been the cause as well. However, investigators were in agreement that Cindy did not leave voluntarily. All her schoolwork and some personal items had been left behind in the car, as well as the fact she wasn't scheduled to work that night anyways. A month into the investigation, a janitor at Ventura College came forward. And yes, this is the same college Cindy had been attending. The man, Garland Triplett, told police that him and Cindy spoke on several occasions, and he remembered that she had mentioned an upcoming trip to Klamath Falls, Oregon. And I'm probably saying that wrong. I apologize, but we're moving on. With no other leads, investigators sent information to Klamath Falls, hoping for sightings of Cindy Lee Mellon, but nothing came of it. The Mellon family and investigators knew in their gut that Cindy didn't just up and leave her life behind.
You think, like, the family, if that was the case, the family would have known, too, that she was planning a trip.
Well, and, yeah, everywhere I read, I know I said it at the beginning, that her sisters and her parents said she was this goody-two-shoe, shy girl. And she hated worrying her parents so much that she literally gave them an itinerary of her day.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's just... makes me kind of suspicious of this janitor, not gonna lie.
Hold on to that. A few weeks later, an attempted kidnapping took place, and it was eerily similar to Cindy's case. A young woman had been attacked on a Tuesday night around 9:30 p.m. The suspect had grabbed her from behind and tried to drag her away. A priest had reported it. Then, a few months later, in September, another woman had been attacked while walking her dog in a vacant lot. Again, it was around 9:30 at night. When the man attempted to drag her away, her screaming scared him away. But they never caught the man. And ugh. Cindy's case went cold. In early 1971, an unidentified body of a young woman was brought in to the Los Angeles County morgue. Detectives on Cindy Mellon's case sent in her dental records, but the dental records did not match the Jane Doe. Cindy's parents and three of her sisters died without knowing what happened to her. One sister is still alive and resides in California today, hoping that maybe, just maybe, she will go to her grave with closure. Now, I personally would like to know, or want to know, if the investigators looked more into this janitor Garland Triplett, who would have been about 45 at the time of Cindy's disappearance, because one of Cindy's sisters, before they died, doubted his story of being close with Cindy. Because, again, she was very shy and had difficulty speaking to people outside of people she already knew or her family. So they just didn't feel like they would have been on, like, speaking terms. Yes, she would have... Maybe if she walked by him, would have said hi if he said hi back, but she wouldn't, like, go out of her way to have a conversation with him. Yeah. She was that shy. What we do know about this Garland Triplett guy is that he lived 5 minutes from the department store Cindy worked at. We also know that sometimes killers like to insert themselves or involve themselves in the investigation in some way. And the fact that when the case was starting to go cold, he came forward with this random tidbit about some trip she allegedly have seems almost like he wanted to see what they knew and he was trying to involve himself in some way.
Yeah, I agree.
And let's say it was someone she knew. If Cindy did know the mystery man even through school, or which she probably would have willingly gone with him if she believed he was helping her get home after getting that flat tire. So, just a couple things to think about. Unfortunately, Garland Triplett died in 1993, I think. I know he died in the 90s, but so there's no way of interviewing him now. But if you have any information on the disappearance of Cindy Lee Mellon, please contact the Ventura Police Department at 805-339-4419. And yes, it has been over 50 years, but there is always hope that someone knows something. And that is the case of Cindy Lee Mellon.
What? When you told me to hold on to the thought of the janitor, I was like, oh, okay, we're getting somewhere. We're getting somewhere. I was really, like, not expecting this to be an unsolved case, I guess.
Yeah. Mostly I just wanted you to hold on to that thought because, like, a lot of people are very suspicious about him, especially how he came about and been like, oh, yeah, I talked to her and this is what she told me. Maybe this is what happened.
Yeah.
Type thing. So, and the fact he lived 5 minutes from where she was abducted.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Someday we'll have answers. And if you guys have answers, you better give them to us.
Let the police know so that we can know, please.
Yes, please. Pass it on.
But yeah.
Well, good job, kids.
Thank you. I was going to do a different case, but it was turning into a way more in-depth case. And so I switched it so that I could work on that one more before. Also, I didn't want to do like a 3-part case first thing into the year. So
yeah, especially since we've done multiple part cases the last month.
But yeah,
I totally get that. I have actually been working on a case like here and there, the same case, but there's just so much information and it's kind of, there's new things that pop up about it every day. And so then there's just so much. So I'm just, you guys might have like a 3-part episode sometime in the near future once I can finally organize all my thoughts with this case, because there's just so much to it. But
I get that.
So I get that.
I get it.
Yes. Well, thank you, kids.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't solved. Oh, 50 years. All right, well, like Kenzie said, if you know anything, think you know anything, let the police know. And thank you guys for just listening. And sorry about our sicknesses. Hopefully next week we will both be back on track.
I hope so. I swear, yeah. I'm sick of being sick.
I am so sick of being sick. And you guys know that I'm pregnant. I'm 23 weeks pregnant now. And having influenza A on top of being pregnant and trying to take care of the most wild, happy, just playful little toddler. Oh my gosh, it's exhausting. So
it's a good thing he's cute.
So I'm going to go nap now because my toddler's napping. Yeah, good thing he's cute.
Love that boy. All right. Well,
all right.
I guess that's it then.
Yes. Thank you guys for listening, and we will be back next week with a brand new episode. Stay safe, potatoes.
Bye.